Ah, well, immortality.
When you look at immortality, you need to think about things like eternal and infinite and dead, and what those words mean and how they relate to life, because it's all about life. And as I was thinking about this all month, I was getting ready to go up to Massachusetts to my mom's house to sort through her stuff, because she's enjoying her eternal life now, and her temporal life is over for this duration. And so it's kind of up in my face personally right now, as well as professionally, to think about what immortality means to me, because my mother physically isn't here anymore. And so thinking about how we think about immortality. Let me say that again. I'm thinking about how we think about immortality and how to get our minds into a space where we're able to think in a way that is not necessarily natural to us in a physical environment. Because what we perceive when we first look around is the physical stuff. It's the stuff that we hold and touch and experience with our senses. And what I know for myself as I've matured, that I like that word better than aged, that what I wanted to know about more and more became not just how to maneuver the stuff, but to figure out how the stuff got here and how to change the stuff that's here. And that was my first motivation. I came into Science of Mind. I wanted to study the law and figure out how to manipulate the conditions, the stuff that was around me. Sometimes it was physical stuff. Sometimes it was the physical body of someone else and the behavior that it was expressing to me. I wanted to change that. But more and more, as I have studied Science of Mind, what I've realized is that the invisible became as real to me as the visible. I learned to perceive that which is beyond that which I can physically touch and see, and actually to be touched by that which is infinite and eternal and immortal. And as I said earlier, much of it was conditioned by the death of my husband in 1995, because he was about love for me in my life. I learned to love more fully through him than anyone else I had ever met up until that point. And he was the focus of my life and my love. And when he died, it felt like everything fell apart. I didn't know how to go on. And I had to relearn what life was about in his absence, in the absence of that love that had been so powerfully opening for me, opening my heart and my mind. And so I've thought about that a lot. What does it mean to live? And what does it mean to die? And the first question that came to mind, since he died when he was 39, was, is it a mistake when somebody dies young? And as long as I judged it as wrong that he died when he was young, my heart was broken. And what I found is that when I was able to move beyond judgment of that experience, that my heart was able to open again and to see the possibility that love continues even beyond death, what we perceive of as death. That the love can continue, and in fact, if love is truly unconditional, love should continue beyond the presence of the physical stuff. And so the question I asked myself at that point was my love big enough to transcend the passing away of the physical presence and to be able to connect with the eternal presence of my husband? And that was a really big question for me, because I felt like my love for him was very big. But then I had to ask, was it big enough for this? Was it big enough to say, I am willing for this love to connect to an infinite eternal life, an infinite eternal love, not just a temporal dependent on conditions love? And the answer was yes. And I was blessed in those months to have access to a really extraordinary man who later became a practitioner. His name is Robert McEwen. And some of you remember Robert. He was a remarkable psychic and a mystic and a Christ consciousness of epic proportions. He was love. He was extraordinary. And in his presence twice, I had an experience, a spiritual experience of love at the eternal level. One time I was riding in his car. It was in the days when he was still able to drive. And I guess it's clear from the way I'm talking about him, but he is no longer physical either now. He made his transition a year or two ago. But we're driving along in the car. He's driving, and he's talking to me about life and about love and about my husband. We talked a lot about physical change and death because his physical body was not working well and was starting to devolve at that time. Considerably did over the next few years. But in talking with him about love, I had an experience of being washed with a wave of love that was bigger than anything I'd ever experienced before. And I could identify that love in that moment as my husband and the love that he had for me that transcended time and space. It was a really powerful spiritual experience for me to feel love at that level that felt like it was so big that it was like being in the ocean and encompassed by a wave. And it happened again in the first year after he died, when I was sitting with Robert in his home talking about love. Once again, I got washed over by a wave of love that was more than I'd ever experienced, that I could identify as my husband. And that kind of experience helped me think about immortality, because suddenly it wasn't a theory, it was an embodied physical experience for me. He wasn't present in the physical, but I could still feel his love. And I could still know that I could be open to that love, not only of my husband, but to the love of my father and my grandparents and anyone else who came into my life for however long and then left it again by transcending into non-physical. So we use the word transition rather than death in Science of Mind to describe the shift from physical to non-physical, the reemergence into non-physical at the end of a physical life. And so those are very practical examples of the experience, someone, mine, experience of going through the death of a loved one and coming to a place of resolution in seeing that love transcends physical life. But I would like to talk about this at a bigger level, at a higher level, about the meta-meaning of what it means to think about immortality and how we can do that, not just through our physical experiences, but at a level of increased comprehension, not just the experience, but a way to think about it. And so acknowledging that we need to think differently in order to think about immortality, I thought, how do we need to think differently? And the best description I can come up with it today, and I'm sure I will change, because boy, I've told this story 100 different times over the last 10 years, and every time I tell it, it changes. The best way I know to say it today is that we need to learn to know ourself as a both and self. We need to know others as both and others. And that means that we need to know simultaneously that we are local and non-local, that we are temporal and eternal, that we are mortal and immortal, that we are physical and non-physical. And the thing that has really helped me think about this is thinking about quantum physics. And some of us recently have seen the movie What the Bleep. How many have seen it so far? About half the room. And What the Bleep talks about is quantum consciousness, the ability to think both about the infinite and the finite pretty much at the same time, although sometimes it's easier to think about one and then the other and then the one and then the other back and forth rather than trying to think about them both at once, because that is a little more challenging, but I think not impossible. The way I first got into this idea of quantum consciousness was by looking at the studies that scientists did about light. And those of you who've known me for a while know that my license plate is URLIGHT. You are light. And the way I got to that was through a song. It was a song that the words of the song were, "You are light, and that's the deepest truth." And when I heard that song, I knew that truth. I got goosebumps every time I heard that song for the first 20 times I played it, and I must have played it 400 times in the course of the year or two after I got it. And then I read a book about Mary Magdalene and Jesus, and Mary Magdalene gives a blessing to a mother of a child in that book. And the blessing that she gives to say to her child every day when she is young is, "You are light, and light you shall remain. You are light, and light you shall remain. And you are here on this physical planet, but the truth is, you are light." And I have goosebumps saying it again. It is such a big part of my consciousness. And I realized when I got the license plate, I had said to myself, "What message do you want to speak to the world?" And the message was, "You are light." But after I got the license plate, I realized that the person who saw it most was me. Every time I go out and get in my car, every time I look for it in a parking lot, I get the message, "You are light." And so what the scientists discovered about light is either a wave or a particle. And it depends on the expectation of the observer and the test you set up, whether you perceive the light as a wave or a particle. That is such a powerful metaphor. If we are light, that is true of us as well. We exist both in a wave state and a particle state. We exist as consciousness, as a stream of consciousness independent of the physical, and we simultaneously also exist as a particular form. And we have the capacity as the observer to shift from that which is particular to that which is infinite. Does that make sense? Are you guys with me? We have the capacity as the observer to observe ourselves either in our eternal waveform, our consciousness form, or our physical form. We have the capacity to do both, one and the other. And so when we think about ourselves as eternal and infinite as well as physical, I don't think any of us have trouble thinking of ourselves as physical. If you have a problem with me, let me know. I'll do another talk. But or maybe ask someone else to do another talk, because sometimes I feel like I've had an out-of-body life. You know, I the physical is wonderful for me to explore, because I've spent more time exploring the non-physical in a lot of ways. So we are both the wave and the particle. We are both the infinite and the finite. And as we learn to think of ourselves that way, what we're doing is changing our definition of self. We are experiencing ourselves as different than we thought we were. Does that seem true to you? That what we initially thought about who we are has to expand in order to feel this truth that we are both the one and the other simultaneously while we're physically here. The way Ernest Holmes said it is that we need to daily expand our consciousness and let in more spiritual territory. We need to loose the boundaries that we have set around our personality and our physical body and recognize that we are more than we thought we were. That we connect to the one mind of God. That we use the law that is God every time we think. That we exist in this divine state. That ultimately we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are not even spiritual beings having a human experience, but rather being human is a spiritual divine experience. It is one. It appears to be two, and all of the time it is one, a both and. Those things exist simultaneously in us as us. It is the truth of who we are. When you think about the poem that David read, I am a thousand winds that blow, I am the diamond glit in the snow, I am the sunlight on the ripened grain, I am the gentle autumn's rain. I am the swift uplifting rush of quiet birds in circled flight, I am the soft state that shines at night. I am not there at my grave, I did not die. What is the consistent thing that is in all those lines? I am. And when Jesus talked about I am that I am, he was talking about the infinite state of being. The I am that I am is the same I am that you are. Is the same I am that the sunlight is and the gentle autumn's rain and the star that shines at night. The I am that I am is universal. Every time I am is spoken, it is the name of God. And how we use the name of God to say I am Connie, to say I am immortal, to say I am infinite, to say I am tired, we are evoking the law to create that reality for ourselves. So how we identify God is what we are saying every time we say, I am. We are speaking the name of God, following that statement. We are seeing God in every time we identify that statement. Because that is the truth. That is the cosmic, universal, I am. I am that I am. And I want to tell you how I know that. I see visions. And I was in meditation and listening to the directions of meditation, a guided meditation. And the instructions in the meditation said, a sculptor has made a statue of you, and you can go in and look at it. And I went in, and I've spoken this before here, so some of you have had this story, and it's a great story, so it's worth repeating if you've heard it before. The statue was a monolith. It was this huge rock with all of these different facets on it. And it felt terrible to me. It was, the energy level was greater than Jasper's. It was frenetic. It was constant. It was ever around. And it was making me crazy because it was too much for me to take in all at once. And then the directions said, go inside the statue. And I went inside the statue and I fell into that space of infinite peace. The I am that I am was inside the statue. And it had the opportunity to experience this monolith from the inside rather than the outside. And there were no boundaries on the inside. It went on forever. But I could see this form that I was seeing. And on each of the facets was a line with writing on it. And from the I am that I am on the inside, I could see that one of those lines was Connie Chandler. It was the linear progression of my life in time. And that every other line on all of these incredibly different facets filled with writing was yet another life that I am as each of them. I am is all life. I am is this life. And so how do I think about that? What do I do with that now that I know that? How does it change the way I live? How can it change the way we are if we remember who we are at that level, the oneness? Carly Simon wrote a song that's really powerful. And the refrain of the song says, life is eternal and love is immortal and death is only a horizon. And a horizon is nothing save the limit of our sight. Nothing except the limit of our sight. And so how we can live differently knowing who we are has changed the way we see. If you've been here all year, I've said that every month as we've studied the qualities of God. That we are not here to create something different. We are here to perceive what already is in fullness. And life is already here in fullness. There is never a moment when life is not here in the fullness of the I am that I am. The infinite life is here right now in me, in you, in everyone we've ever known, in everyone we ever will know. So how do we live? We live by changing the way we think. And if you want more information about how to think, there is an incredible literature of information on near-death experiences. I have many books in my own collection. There's a bunch of them here. Stephen Levine on Who Dies, Lee Lawson on Visitations from the Afterlife, Michael Newton on Journey of Souls, Thich Nhat Hanh on No Death, No Fear. There's huge literature on this. If you want to expand your consciousness, you can read from people who know that there's more to life than the physical, that we are both and beings. And I want to end with the cover note from Thich Nhat Hanh's book. He said, there's a story about a Zen master whose monastery was overrun by marauding soldiers. When the Zen master did not appear to be frightened, the soldier's caption said, don't you know who I am? I could run my sword through you and not think twice about it. And the Zen master replied, don't you know who I am? You could run your sword through me and I wouldn't think twice about it. And so it is.
So it is.